Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am your fill-in host, Barnabas Piper, here with Ronald J. Martin. I don't think Ted is doing anything particular today except being a busy employed man. Is he, Ron?
Yeah, I think his employment exceeded our employment.
he's overemployed. Not a problem that some people have. Overemployed, underpaid. That's what exactly. It is to be in the world of academics. So we're gonna do our best to make it without him today. See if we can pull this off. Before we get into the topics for the day, we do have two sponsors. The first sponsor is us. We are sponsoring us nice. With our upcoming live event, Indy Live, on March 31st, on the eve of some large Reformed conference that I'll probably be around working and whatnot. But this event, Indy Live, is the real highlight of that week because Ronnie, myself, and Ted will be doing 3 live episodes, including 1 lengthy Q&A where we get to interact with you, the listeners. And that's the best part. It'll be in Indianapolis at a church called Soma. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. There's not a question mark on the church name. I just couldn't remember. So Soma Church, and it's 7 to 10 p.m., March 31st. If you go to happyrantpodcast.com, you'll see a big thing in the middle that says events and a big orange button on that that says get your tickets here. It's got all the details. Tickets are $15. And tell your friends, invite people. We would love to have a huge crowd come out for that. So that is us sponsoring us. Our second sponsor is a gentleman named Joe Waller, who has published a book of poems called As I Learned to Walk. And if you're familiar with the Valley of Vision, so like Puritan prayers, it's kind of in that vein, except without all the these and the thous. So it's like the New Living version of Valley of Vision, I think is probably the best way to describe it. But I read through it because I wanted to make sure we weren't promoting something that was, you know, kooky or nonsense. And it's really good. He's a really good poet. He's a youth pastor, and he's getting his PhD, and apparently is also very artistically creative. So if you're somebody who enjoys sort of reflective, devotional poetry, it's not like heavy theological stuff, you know, like reading William Cowper or something. It's called As I Learned to Walk. You can get it at Amazon, or you can go to 5roundrocksmedia.com. To check it out as well. So As I Learned to Walk by Joe Waller, great book of poems, talking about everything from, as good poetry does, everything from tragedies to glories to grace to just sort of the kind of the full spectrum of emotional and spiritual life. So check that out as well. Those are our sponsors for today. Business over. I guess we can dive into the actual topics. I'm so used to Ted doing this that I'm just waiting for somebody else to kick this thing off. I'm just going to sit here in silence.
It's like you keep hesitating and pausing, Pipe, and it's like, no, you're the one that has to keep rolling.
Oh, right. But, I'm pseudo-hosting today, so I'd like to
apologize.
And
that's because I turned it over to you, too. I was like, hey, here's a plan, Pipe. Why don't you do it?
That's right. You get to host Indy Live because you are our on staff MC. I think that's your title.
Sure.
All right. Well, the topics that we came up with for today, I'll just sort of center around church things. Specifically, why do people like mega churches? That was my question. That's the question I posed in my mind and then shared with Ron. And Ron said, yes, we should talk about this. So why is it that with the culture being, you know, it's very anti-church and megachurch, you know, megachurch pastors are falling right and left. And it seems like with culture swinging one way, megachurches should all be crumbling. And yet somehow, some way, the mega attractional church is still like a cultural institution. So, Ron, as the man of the cloth, as Ted likes to call you, I don't know why it's man of the cloth. That seems odd to me. That seems very Catholic, and you're not. But as our ordained minister on the podcast,
much more Protestant. Yes.
Yeah, there we go. You're an ordained minister of the gospel. What is it about megachurches that keeps them sort of thriving in the midst of people seemingly fleeing church at a record rate?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I'm like racking my brain now. I just read an article kind of on the same lines of what your question is. It may have been a Stetzer article, but I'm not sure. But it was talking about the fact that mega churches are they've mainly been led by boomers, and these dudes are all retiring now. And what they're finding is that they're having a hard time like finding somebody younger to sort of take over the mantle, partly because to get somebody that they want that's a little bit younger, either like a Gen X or a millennial, what they're finding is that they have a different set of leadership skills altogether than what the boomers previously had. And then secondly, a lot of the feelers they put out for dudes that are of this age are absolutely not interested. So the whole idea of like coming into something of 2,000 plus people and just all of these like things that they would have to unravel, you know, big ship to have to turn because there's undoubtedly some changes that need to be made and all these things to even convince somebody to want to come into that, they're allegedly having a lot of problems finding somebody. So it's kind of interesting that like that's even like being talked about and dealt with as some of these generational shifts are just like naturally happening. But in terms of just your question, I mean, I think it's a great question. It's weird because like, I feel like anything that's big and anything that is a spectacle and anything that is built to be a spectacle and then driven as a, I mean, that is something that just tends to attract people in general.
It does, like, but not usually for any long period of time. Like spectacles tend to have seemingly pretty short shelf lives or can only be done periodically. Like, you know, we talk every year we talk about award shows and things. You know, the Grammys are coming up. They're a spectacle, and the Super Bowl was a spectacle, but those things only happen once a year.
It's a one-time shot, yeah. But I mean, do you think though that it's even, but I agree with what you're saying, but do you think that it has anything to do with like, man, when you see one of these, when you see like a Willow Creek, and I know we're going like to the top of the food chain.
Yeah,
it's like the
OG of attractional churches.
It is. But like, is there something about it that's more akin to like just going to like a Major League Baseball game? I mean, everybody keeps going back to Major League Baseball games. Like nobody's like saying, man, I wish Major League Baseball would just go back to the way it was when there used to be like 300 people showing up and it was a little more like relational. Like nobody's saying that about like sports, right?
Yeah, but the difference is that every time you go to a sporting event, it's an entirely different event. Like it's unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. You know some of the key players, but like a church service is about as predictable as it comes. And if, in fact, when churches try to be unpredictable, they usually are awful. this is when Stephen Furtick ends up on a futon.
But are you proving your point though in the fact that like mega churches that are always trying to like create, you know, something unpredictable, something new. I mean, that is like, we are talking about Furtick. We are talking about Carl Lentz. Like we are talking about those kind of churches, right? Where they're like every week, man, they're just discovering and reinventing, right?
I mean, is it basically just like Jesus robe Tony Robbins? Is that it? Because I mean, I'm baffled that Tony Robbins is still like a sensation. You know, he does these events and people pay gobs of money to go hear him basically say you're good enough, you're smart enough, and doggone it, people like you. I mean, is that what people are going for? I was having this conversation with a couple of friends the other day, and they're like, why do people keep showing up at these churches that never say anything out of the Bible? They don't say anything to correct or direct or anything meaningful in life. And people take half of a Sunday, put on their makeup and their big hair, and drag their Bible down there to go sit and do what exactly? I can't figure it out exactly.
I spent time, like when I was younger, I spent time at a massive church in Southern California. Probably about, at the time, it was probably about 10,000 people. I just kind of, you know, half of my teenage years into my like, you know, early 20s, it's just where I was. And at some point, all the things that you just brought up, you know, those things kind of came to bear. Like I need something deeper and thicker and richer, and all those things like started happening. So I ended up finding something smaller, but yeah, but to your question, like there are people that like, that exist in these churches for 20, 30, 40 years. Like they're devoted, they're committed to that kind of a thing. And like, I think like we're in a tribe, but we don't get to talk to a lot of people that are still like engaging in that kind of a church. So it's like, in some ways, like to answer that question, you have to like, you have to ask like what their definition is of theology, what their definition is of worship. And again, if they were never given anything more rich and more thick, they might think what they have, it like that is rich, that is thick, that is deep for them, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, these, I mean, living in the South, there's, you know, as Ted likes to say, you can swing a dead cat and hit one of these churches on any corner. I don't know why the dead cat thing amuses me because Ted loves cats. I like,
yeah,
this,
I know, you I know, don't
dead,
get that
dead
one.
Cats is sort of more my thing.
I don't know why he picked that animal. I'm gonna have to know, talk like, to him about
pick,
that.
Pick like a, yeah. I don't know, a woodchuck or something,
like an aardvark or something.
Yeah,
something. Yeah, exactly.
But. So I get to interact on a pretty regular basis with people who are part of these churches, and there is an absolute devotion to the church, to the leaders, to the experience, and I mean in an enviable way. Like, they have often made me feel guilty by my lack of enthusiasm about
totally.
Churches that I have been at. Now, currently I'm at a church that I love and have no intention of leaving, but it took a long time to find it. But they're also the types who if you said, hey, let's go through a Tim Keller book, would be like, oh, that's heady stuff. Like, that's just.
Or would they even know who TK is?
I mean, they probably would. Or if you just like, you know, if it was sort of an interdenominational Bible study and you said, hey, let's use Tim Keller's book on the, what is it? The King Jesus or something on the Gospel of Mark, and you're like, hey, let's use this.
Yeah.
They would get through a chapter and go, man, that like bent my brain. And that's not to say anything about their intelligence level as much as their regular interaction with theology or complete lack thereof. I mean, in these, and so yeah, there is definitely just a lack of depth in terms of the theological depth, not necessarily.
Except they wouldn't think that. Like, I know somebody who will remain nameless, and so I actually do know somebody. I just don't have a lot of conversations, but in the past, the one or two convos I've had, there is a real sense that they would never think that what they were attending or a part of wasn't deep. They don't think like, oh, these, like that church over there who has this preacher and goes through those books for their Bible studies, like they tend to go a little bit deeper than we do. But you know what's so interesting about it, and something you said just made me think about this, is that there is like this sort of this fandom with, I think, some of these bigger churches, mm-hmm. where they become almost like brand ambassadors, because again, mega churches are really good at branding, and they try, I mean, they're really, really, really spending a lot of time kind of completing the brand all the time, right? And so what I've gotten from that, from this particular individual, is that like they're really devoted, they're really proud, and they're really devoted to the brand in the same way, not to always bring it back to sports, but in the same way that somebody is like, they're going to die for their team. And there is a sense of that, because it's about something else other than what you're saying the reason why you go and fellowship at the church you go to is about. You know, why are you with Ortland? Well, because, man, there's so much depth, there's so much richness, it's awesome. You know, and like, that's yeah. why you're going there. It's not because Ortland has created this particular brand that you get to wear a jersey and you get to cheer for it and you're going around promoting it all the time. But that seems to be like the direction that a lot of these churches go in. And I know, man, you can be a small church and do the same thing and have your own like kind of anti-brand. I mean, I get all of that, of course.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that there's certainly been a trend that way too, towards the sort of the unchurch, or the emergent church,
right?
Whatever, 15 years ago when Ted got, you know,
world famous, yeah,
world famous. With his co-author,
whoever that guy was, right?
Writing about the emergent church. I mean, that was sort of the unchurch. You know, it's like a church built around our stories and these different things, sort of moving away from traditional church. It was sort of the worst reaction to a mega church. I'm sorry, mega is the wrong term. Attractional church. Mega just means big, and big churches can be, you know, can be good churches too, but.
Right.
But then there's like church planting movements and house church movements, and yeah. just sort of or on the more sort of heady theological side, you get people who are so doctrinally specific that their church could not possibly ever grow because, you know, we call that
fundamentalism.
Yeah, we don't all wear robes and pronounce the Westminster Confession of Faith every Sunday.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. The branding point is really interesting. Just thinking about the way that people interact online. the people who I know who are the most sort of geeked up and enthusiastic about what their church is doing are all part of these churches.
Exactly. No, that's a really good point, man. And that's the part that is, that's the part I, and again, I think the reason why you hear that or I hear that is because they have grown to be such a large network that their voices just tend to travel further.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not, I mean, honestly, man, people that go to your church or go to my church, I mean, they're about our quote unquote brand, but they're just not going to have that kind of a voice that's going to travel wide enough for us to like hear about that. Right.
Well, that's true. But also like there's such a distinct difference where, I mean, I feel like, so I go to Emmanuel Church in Nashville, which is, you know, it's a mid-sized church. We probably get, I don't know, 600 to 800 people on a Sunday, not counting kids. And so, I mean, it's good size, but not enormous. When people from our church share things, they're usually sharing something that I would consider sort of substantive and qualitative. So it might be the video of the sermon. It might be this happened in our small group. It might be this person prayed for me. Like, there's something substantive to it, not sort of big event kind of thing, like, hey, come out to our big Christmas thing, or hey, do these, I mean, I don't even know, like a branded Sunday morning service or a huge service day project kind of thing. And that's
because they almost act like a right, because these churches, these larger churches, almost, I'm sorry, attractional churches, let me get the lingo right, they almost act as sort of like,
otherwise
promotion.
We are going to get chewed up and spit out by someone from the Village Church. Somebody's going to listen and go, hey, we're a big church. That's not
I love
us.
How that's the only like legit big church that we get. Okay. Maddie Chan, Bethlehem, that's like the only
Bethlehem
legit
Baptist
big church we
they're
can go
also
to,
big,
right?
Not as big as Village.
But no, but I think what you're describing are promotional teams. And so when you get an attractional church, it's going to come off way more like, hey, we're part of this promotional team for the church, which is like, you need to come to my church. Like, it's awesome. You know, it's like that whole vibe.
Yeah,
you know,
it feels a little bit like the grand opening of like a restaurant, like a sports bar that puts like girls in referee jerseys outside to like, you know, try to, you know, get real peppy and get people excited to go to the brand new, you know, Wingstop or whatever. That's exactly. that's kind of what these churches feel like.
Oh, Pipe, we sound so snobby right now.
I know. What's ironic?
If we were Ted, we'd have to go back and edit the heck out of this one, man.
Yeah, I know. I don't feel bad at all because
no, I'm good. I'm good. I'm just saying. Let's qualify our snobbiness.
You avoid saying offensive things. Ted has a conscience, and I just roll with it, I guess. But I had a conversation recently with Jeff Metters, who's a church planter. Now he's just a pastor because he's been there long enough that he stopped planting and is just pastoring now. But he has a book coming out really soon called Humble Calvinism. And so we had a long conversation about like what it means to be a humble Calvinist. And I'm pretty sure this whole conversation is not that because it's us telling other people why their churches suck. But, all right, so moving on in the conversation, what do you think the future of the megachurch is? And this isn't just the attractional church. This is just like the megachurch. Because here's two things that come to mind that I think are real threats to the megachurch. One is their sheer overhead, the budget that a megachurch has to maintain just to exist. If you're a small church, you function on a small budget, but you also don't spend a ton of money. So if giving is down, it's always down. At a megachurch, if giving is down, like you might not be able to pay your six-figure mortgage or whatever. So that's one. The second is if our culture moves in a direction that marginalizes Christianity more, even to move kind of to illegalize it in some ways, that seems to be a major threat to these churches. So just kind of looking down the road, putting on your, you know, looking into your crystal ball, putting on the little turban and being, you know, fortune teller Ron, Nostra Ron. what do you see as the future for the mega church in America?
Okay. So I'm going to be a little more doom and gloom, Pipe, about this one. I'm going to be a little more
shocker.
Like Big T.
Wait a minute. The pastor who meets with, you know, a moderate-sized congregation in a warehouse in the middle of Ohio is doom and gloom about the megachurch?
Yeah.
I'm stunned.
Yeah, exactly right. That wasn't expected at all. I think I actually think it's going to be fine. I think it's going to be fine and dandy. And the reason why is because I think as long as there are men with – with, gosh, this is going to sound horrible. I need to be careful how I phrase this.
No, I think, nobody wants you to be careful. They want to hear exactly what you think.
I think as long as there are men who battle with pride and ego, there are always going to be massive, massive churches. They might change in style and direction. There might be some substantive things that are different about them into the future. But I think just in terms of pure size, there are enough people out there who literally their drive is to do something that just continues to grow and expand. And I think you're always going to see the availability for that kind of a church to exist and to flourish in whatever, you know, positive or negative way we want to define flourishing, right?
So you're kind of describing just the commoditization of Christianity, which we've already seen in like Christian music. If you're around Christian music, like the Christian music industry, you get to know that within it, I mean, it's got an ugly underbelly.
Oh,
It is just as sort of greedy and lascivious and everything else as would, you know, the secular rock and roll world be in a lot of ways. And so you're kind of talking about church in the same terms, it sounds like, where it's just if we're going to entrepreneurialize this thing, business, you know, sort of business principle, growth principle, this thing, then it will just keep on chugging because those principles will sustain it at least numerically.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a good comparison to the music industry in the sense that there are like artists out there who just say, hey, I really just want to make my art. And if it attracts a crowd, great, because I want it to be heard, but I don't have this thirst and desire that it needs to be heard by millions. And then there are other people that get into it, and I'm not even judging this, but there are other people that get into it and, you know, have legitimate talents, but they do have this, this desire that they want as many people as possible to hear what they do, what they create. And I don't think it's any different in the church world. I think you're always going to have people that say, hey, I just want to do ministry. And, you know, whether we're a church of 50 or 500 or 5,000, God will bring that growth, but we're not going to do anything to try to promote that or gain that. We're just going to be faithful. And then you have other people that get in and say, hey, what are the potentials here? What are the possibilities here? Can we reach as many people in our town as we can reach, in our city as we can reach? And let's do some of these things that will grab that larger number. So I just think that's always going to exist.
All right. So let me draw that distinction again between mega as large and attractional as, you know, the church that sort of de-emphasizes the harder things of the gospel and emphasizes like the pretty performing aspects of things. So of those mega churches, of which there are plenty that do seek to be biblical gospel oriented churches, do you see the same future for those churches that you do for sort of you said that you think they'll be fine, but you also painted it seemingly kind of away from the gospel in terms of the leanings of those churches. Did I understand that right?
Well, I think it can be, you know, I don't know, you know, I mean, that I think that's where it gets gray, right? Because at the end of the day, I mean, there's so many factors that go into why churches attract a lot of people. I mean, it's geography. It's just a very, very compelling speaker. You know, there's all of, and that's just two things, right? And there's all of these different things that I think play into why a church might grow and then why another church, you know, 4 miles up the road just is not going to experience that kind of growth. So I think sometimes churches grow in spite of themselves in the sense that, man, they didn't do the big promotional pushes. They didn't try to create these big, you know, attractional paradigms. And God just allowed them to grow, but they stuck to their guns. They preached the gospel. It's deep, it's rich, it's thick. And then I think you do have other churches that just, man, have just guns blazing, have done this attractional thing, and they get a gazillion people as well. But they got to keep that machine rolling too. Whereas the other church that just got it because they got it, because God blessed them and they got it. I mean, they're operating under something that I think is a little healthier and a little more palatable in terms of what we would consider healthy church, right?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously think you and I, if we were going to define healthy churches, we're going to start with what does the church believe and teach,
right?
You know, and from there you get into issues of culture and issues of church polity and things like that, all of which matter a lot, but can be a little bit varied as well.
But I know we always go back to the village because, you know, Chan is as deep and as rich and as thick as they get in the preaching, and even their model is very simple. But again, I mean, you know, he was just such a, he's a compelling speaker. They're in a place where there's, you know, they live in like an area where there's like, you know, one person every, you know, 3 centimeters. So I mean, man, it was like, they were going to attract a lot of people, but again, they didn't set out to do that.
Well, and they're an interesting case as well, because they've kind of de-expanded in some ways, where they went from being a multi-site church to helping spin those sites off into independent churches. So that, I mean, there was a massive expansion, and then a kind of a self-correction, not morally, but just like, this is not the healthiest and the best.
Yeah, self-correction back towards health, because they were seeing potential unhealth if they kept going the direction.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of, it was becoming untenable from, you know, a whole bunch of ways, just a church health standpoint. And so even there, there's a moderate move away from the perpetual expansion and growth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when I see churches that have sort of, you know, like international networks, you know, it's like we are one church with campuses in 72 countries. Right. I'm like, I mean, that's not even a denomination. Denomination.
We called that church planting back in the old days. But,
well, I call that a professional network.
Right.
That is a conference going on. I mean, it's basically an affiliation of events. I think it pretty well undermines the whole concept of church in any local sense, not necessarily the you know, big C church, but yeah, those are, and I think that only works when there's not a major emphasis on what is being taught, what is being believed, you know, that those sort of structures and doctrines.
Well, how do you have time to talk about what you believe when you have all of that going on? I mean,
it almost doesn't matter if you have a killer worship band. So
it's just, you know, it's like pastor just preach. I don't know. What do you,
and it's amazing. There are churches that are built on the worship teams. So
yeah, but it's just, it's funny when you think about, like, when you think about the machines that get built, I mean, we're a small thing, and you know, already, you know, some weeks it feels like there's so much going on, and we're so simple. We're so stripped down. And yet there's so much going on. Like, the last thing anybody's talking about, you know, the last thing anybody's coming to me to ask me about is, hey, by the way, Big R, what are you preaching on Sunday? You know, I mean, that doesn't even, that's not like a topic of the conversation all the time. You know, we're talking about all these other things. I can't even imagine if we have what you just described a minute ago, like, when does what we believe and what we're teaching even get discussed? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's from the outside looking in, it seems like it has taken, I mean, taking a backseat is a dumb cliche. I mean, we're talking like a 15-passenger van, and it's in like the fourth row. I mean, it's the all the way in the back.
Right.
All right, I have one more question. I know time is short for us today because both of us are running between things. Unlike Ted, we were able to carve out time for this priority. All right, last question is, what is the next cool church trend? So in the 90s, 80s, 90s, there was the attractional megachurch. Then there was the emergent church. Then there was, like, church planting has maintained a level of coolness for a long time, although it's changed sort of shapes over time. There was sort of the center city church movement, you know, kind of Tim Keller-esque, and everybody wants to plant in the city. Seems like now everybody wants to plant in hip neighborhoods. What's the next trend? I have a couple ideas, but I wanted to hear what you think.
Yeah, I just think with trends, what happens with a trend is, like, everybody starts oversteering. And then so at some point, somebody raises their hand and goes, okay, because we've all been doing this, this has been neglected over here.
Yep.
And so one of the trends that is popping up now is rural church planning. So,
or as I like to call it, the Wendell Berry church.
There you go. Small town, Wendell Berry, same thing. So what everybody's recognizing is, as all of these new church planters over the last 20 years have made this big rush for the city, there's now all of these small towns that are just ripe for church planning. And there's a lot of benefits to it. There's, in a lot of ways, there's a lot of compelling reasons to find a small town, to plant a small town church. There are some ways to do it that make it much, much more simple and much more palatable than doing, you know, like an urban or an inner city or a center church plant. And so I think that is something, I mean, Acts 29 is talking about it. Stetzer's talking about it. Our denomination, the EFCA, is talking about it. Sojourn Network is talking. I mean, so there's the conversation now has shifted, and that's something that you're hearing come up like a lot right now. Donnie Griggs wrote this book, yep. Small Town Jesus. He's in North Carolina. And he's just a guy that wrote, I think, wrote probably the first of many books that are going to be coming out.
A guy named Stephen Whitmer just came out or is coming out soon. And it's also about small. It's more about his is more about small town pastoring, because I think he took a pastorate at a church that had been around a long time.
I think he did. Yeah. So his is almost more like revitalization.
Yeah.
Donnie Griggs is about just going into a town and starting a brand new work, which is what we did as well. Yeah. So I think I don't, you know, small town church planning, it lacks a lot of sexiness. And so it is going to appeal to a particular demographic. You know,
okay, but just like in the 90s, nerds, like they did Revenge of the Nerds because that was like an outcast part of society.
Yeah.
And that might have been 80s. There was like seven of them. So, but nerds are now cool. I think the lack of sexiness runs the risk of becoming sexy.
It does, because it's farm culture, and we can make farm culture like is all hipster now. And you could actually talk about there being like this legitimate, like it, not cool. That's why it's cool now movement. Back
and that's why I call it the Wendell Berry thing. Cause Wendell Berry's been doing the same thing for like 60 years.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
And,
a lot of people have. It was
never cool. It was always quality, but it was never cool until the last like 10 years when, you know, everybody wanted to grow like non-GMO potatoes or whatever. And all of a sudden, Wendell Berry's sort of agricultural leaning, small town, all of those like those themes, his sort of natural, naturalistic kinds of stuff was something that people gravitated towards. That's why I call this Wendell Berry Church, because I'm like, I think people are going to – the lack of sexiness is going to be the badge of honor.
Well, no,
takes an ugly turn.
But you're totally right, though, Pipe. And part of that is everybody now – Returning to Contemplative Pastor by Eugene Peterson. Mm-hmm. And it is, hey, guess what? I can go, man, I don't have to get, this vocation, this calling can be something like very streamlined and very simple. And I can just get back to doing the basic things that I originally thought I was called to do, which is praying, which is preaching, which is people, and all this other stuff that it is just like,
yeah. And then the neighbor's like, hey, can you come help me deliver a calf?
Totally. So, but that's people though still, right? Yeah. So it's like, it takes you out of like all of just these, the complexities, to be honest, in my opinion, that come when you plant churches in Manhattan or you're going to suburban neighborhoods. There's a lot more complexities.
I read a couple of those small church books because I was writing a couple, kind of working with the publishers to write a couple PR pieces for them. And those were eye-opening as to like the incredible challenges of being a small town pastor, just in terms of, especially if it's very rural or agricultural, because you're the counselor, you're the ambulance, you're the hay baler, you do it all. Yeah, you have to, and you're going into a community that's been fairly insular and has deep roots, and you don't. And there's a lot going on there, which I.
Tell me about it, Pipe.
The same is true. And I mean, it's the same is true in if you go into an urban neighborhood.
It's now, true.
Maybe
it's
not
true.
If it's a transient urban neighborhood. Those are probably easier to plant in, but different challenges, but not the deep roots.
They're all different challenges.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, being a pastor is hard everywhere, I think.
But. Well, Piper, I mean, not Piper. Who's the other famous guy? Oh, Keller.
Yes.
Keller said, he said, he started out in Virginia at a rural church for 9 years, and he said he wishes that every young pastor could start in a rural church because they're forced to do everything and wear all the hats.
Yeah.
And he said that was his education besides all of his education, right? And
it's the reason he made it as a pastor instead of just a scholar.
Totally. Yeah, that's a great point too.
Yeah. One other trend that comes to mind that I think is going to be maybe not as sexy because it's way more work, but again, the ego of people will wear it like a badge of honor, and that is church revitalization.
Yeah.
So those churches that are having trouble finding younger pastors, you know, they were huge in 1996, mm-hmm. and they've sort of diminished, and it's the same people who were there in 1996, and there's a lot of challenges to it. People going in, younger pastors going in to sort of be a revitalizing leader.
Yeah.
I think that's a thing that will be on the rise, partly out of necessity and just availability, and partly because that every time there's a movement, then books get written about it and podcasts get started about it. And you know, there becomes a whole wealth of resources put into it. So people, you know, the herd of aspiring pastors will follow that one trend or the other.
Right.
I think that's another one that's going to be that's going to follow on the heels of Wendell Berry.
You're saying revitalization of actual like big churches.
Or formerly like, big churches that have diminished. Right. But yeah, so not like the urban revitalization where it's a church of like 11 people. You know, it used to be 300, but then everybody moved out of the neighborhood. I'm talking about like a church that's mostly gray heads that used to be thriving, but then all of the current members' kids and grandkids left and never came back.
Yeah, and that's a real thing. That's actually happening for sure.
I mean, I know a couple people who have done it in, well, Florida, of course, because there's a lot of gray heads there. And the challenges of that are remarkable. I think of all of the options, that would be my least favorite.
But I think you're onto something. In my opinion, because I've had recent conversations about what you're talking about, to be honest. And I think that is I think that would be the most challenging for sure. There's no doubt. The inability to change is what you're talking about when you get
hired because they
like
say
that.
We want somebody young with fresh perspectives to make changes, and you go in there and they go, "You're too young. We don't like your perspective, and we won't change."
Yeah,
and,
they bring you in. They say, "Take us to the future." You get in there and they say, "You better not make a move."
That's right. No, the future is scary. We like the past better. Let's go back.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I'm sure there's more opinions we could offend people with about churches and church movements, but
absolutely,
we have done what we always do, and that is to wander to and far through these various topics. Before I give the sign off, though, don't forget to go to happierandpodcast.com where you can get your Lagares Roasters coffee, which is delicious. I drank a whole pot of it earlier today, where you can get your tickets to Indy Live. March 31st, 7 p.m., Indianapolis, right on the eve of the Gospel Coalition. So if you're thinking of going to that, just arrive a little bit early and have way more fun. And lastly, be sure to check out the book, As I Learned to Walk by Joe Waller. It's the book of poetry I mentioned at the beginning. It's excellent. So, Ron, thanks for doing this. I hope we held it together without Ted.
I think we did, man.
All right.
We pulled it off, yeah.
Good times. Thank you, listeners. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, or art to make, or perhaps businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. If you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform today or lifeaudio.com.